Well, welcome back to GoldSeek.com Radio. Today's featured guest, Nick Barishev. President and CEO of Bullion Management Group, BMG. Widely recognized as an international bullion expert, Mr. Nick Barishev returns to GoldSeek Radio. Welcome back to the show, Nick Barishev.
Oh, happy to be on your show again, Chris.
Well, it's a delight to have you back today, and I wonder how the weather is way north in Toronto, Canada.
Well, it's great. We're experiencing a bit of an Indian summer, so let's hope it lasts long. A lot of people are predicting a heavy-duty winter, so we'll take it while we can.
We were talking about today, before the show started, the silver market, AG, that tiny relative to gold market that has fascinated investors and explorers for hundreds of years. Over 400 years ago, there was an enormous find south of the border, led to all kinds of strange economic anomalies. But now, once again, it's a rare commodity.
50% of the silver demand is industrial demand. And, you know, as a result, what happens there is silver has a unique characteristic in that it's supply and demand inelastic. Typically, like if the price of a commodity goes up, the demand goes down, which is what happens in the jewelry uses of gold and silver. If the price goes up, jewelry demand drops. In the case of industrial demand, because there are no substitutes for silver, it doesn't matter what the price is for silver, the demand will not drop. And that's simply because, you know, there's a few cents worth of silver in your iPhone. So it doesn't matter whether the price of silver, $20 or $200, same number of iPhones will get sold. It doesn't affect the end product. So that's how it is on the demand side. On the supply side, 83% of silver supply is byproduct of things like copper, zinc, lead, etc. So if you get a price spike in silver, say silver goes to 200, there's going to be no effect on supply. You're not going to produce more copper or lead or zinc just to get a few more ounces of silver out. You have no effect there. So the industrial demand actually works the opposite of what people think. It doesn't suppress the price. Once you have the monetary demand move the price of silver, then the industrial demand won't slow it. They'll just have to go with it. Example of that, I think it was 1998, there was a rising demand in palladium, and you need palladium largely for gas-powered catalytic converters. And Ford bought something like $2 billion of palladium at twice the prevailing spot price. That's what happens to the industrial demand. So without silver, you don't produce iPhones, you don't produce solar panels, a whole bunch of industrial commodities. There's no replacement. So these people that think that industrial demand suppresses the price, dead wrong. And that's where there's a big difference if you take gold and platinum. Most mine production comes from pure gold mining companies. They're not byproducts. Where only 20% of the silver is from pure silver mines. There's a number of factors, and one of the things is that, as you mentioned, it's a tiny market. There's under $2 billion of silver produced every year, and there's very little in above-ground stocks these days. Like there was in the 80s and so on, there was U.S. Mint had about 1 billion ounces, and then there was 1 billion ounces in strategic reserves. All that's been sold and gone. There isn't a great deal of above-ground supply and relatively little annual supply from a mine point of view. And when you take a look at those numbers and compare it to, you know, global financial assets of about $250 trillion, you can appreciate, you know, even a fraction of that $250 trillion decides it's now time to hold hard assets like gold and silver. You'll have a dramatic move in both, but particularly in silver, because it's so much of a smaller market. Like the annual gold market's about $90 billion compared to silver's $2 billion. The other thing is we've gone to a more leveraged situation on the COMEX. So we've got, in terms of the, you know, current futures contracts, they stand at about 120% of annual mine supply. and there's about 44 owners per every ounce of eligible inventory at the COMEX. So at some point in time, that story is going to end badly, and there's going to be a huge short covering have to happen. The easiest thing to look at is the gold-silver ratio. So right now, it undervalues silver because we're at about a ratio of 68 and $19 silver. Now, the average has been 47. Now, if we move to an average of 47 at today's gold price, you get $27 silver. And we've reached lows of around 17, and that would give us $76 silver at today's gold price. So you can see there's a lot of room there. Like, for instance, a lot of people think we will be, you know, at the $2,000 mark for gold in the near future. And if we go to the average 47 ratio for silver, you'd get a $42 silver price, which is about a double from today's pricing. So that's what you've got, is a double contribution. You've got kind of a rising price for a lot of macroeconomic issues and, you know, levels of debt and, you know, all those conditions that people talk about. But the silver would go up proportionately more because it would rebalance back to a normalized ratio.
Very good. $10,000 gold. This is a target that maybe seemed lofty a decade ago or even two or three decades ago, but it's now becoming a price target that we hear more regularly.
That's right. There's lots of people that predicted the $10,000 number and even higher numbers, Jim Rickards being one of them. The way I came up with the $10,000 gold number is simply up until the correction in 2011, the price of gold and the U.S. debt has been almost perfectly correlated. And at 2011, we had a correction. I think that was an artificial correction with a lot of, you know, manipulation of paper markets. But nevertheless, there was a correction. So right now, if we were to get back to that ratio, we should be over $2,000 gold right now. Now, the reality of the situation is the U.S. debt is not going down. Doesn't matter who gets elected president. Doesn't matter what happens, the U.S. debt is not going to even slow down, let alone decline. As the U.S. debt goes up, you're simply going to have the price of gold follow it up. And that's where in the very near future you get to that relationship of U.S. debt to gold.
Last check, we were approaching $20 trillion now on official U.S. debt. But we've also had some great guests on the show, including Professor Lawrence Kotlikoff, who is an outspoken advocate of balancing the budget and reducing debt. And he's very concerned by entitlement program spending, which he claims is at $199 trillion when we account for all that we will eventually have to pay out under the current system. According to your methodology, we would then see gold have to reflect much higher prices.
Well, exactly, and this is the problem. Like because of so much of the annual deficit is the entitlements. Politically, I can't see that ever changing. You know, who's going to say we're going to cut Social Security and Medicare to balance budgets? It does not happen.
Other issues facing the markets, of course, includes global demand from the two economic behemoths and emerging economic powerhouses, India and China. Cultures very different, but a huge propensity for an interest in the precious metals and silver, of course. But as gold becomes more scarce and more pricey, suddenly silver becomes a much more appealing alternative to the yellow metal. And demand, of course, remains robust in India and China. And now we hear that the financial institutions are perhaps stockpiling and even hoarding gold in anticipation of difficult economic times ahead and perhaps even currency wars and maybe even a new global reserve currency.
One of the things that isn't on the radar, it certainly isn't in the mainstream media, Chinese yuan is accepted into the SDR back last year, and it's activated September 30th of this year. Now, China officially has 1,600 tons of gold. Many analysts have looked at, you know, the the imports and supply demand and everything else. And the estimates are that China has in excess of 5,000 tons of gold. What the implications there are, and what China does is they buy the gold in their sovereign wealth fund. It doesn't report to anybody. And when it suits them, they transfer the gold to the central bank, where it's then officially reported. So up until the time that China becomes an active part of the SDR, being currently allocated 10% of the SDR allocation, then China has no real motivation to announce their true gold holdings. Once they're actively part of the SDR and they need to get more than 10%, the way the SDR formula works is they then would announce their true gold holdings. And if the true gold holdings are 5,000 tons or more, then their allocation would more double. That's the objective of China, so that the SDR ultimately replaces the U.S. dollar as the world's reserve currency. That's in play now. The bigger move is if China announces that they have, say, 5,000 tons of gold, the question becomes, where did that gold come from? Because the reporting agencies, GFMS and CPM, have already accounted for all the gold, okay, right down to a fraction of an ounce in terms of scrap supply. So where did this 5,000 tons of gold come from? So the only place it can come from is leased gold from the central banks, the Western central banks. So if China ever announces that they have 5,000 tons of gold, that means the Western central banks don't have 5,000 tons of gold.
You know, the United States had at the top of the gold stockpile list, reserve list, at over 9,000 tons, and the estimates were 3,000 to 4,000 tons with China. But one of our guests here, Dr. Stephen Lieb, agrees with you. There could be close to 25,000 tons in China. Now, not all of the People's Bank of China, but split among their massive money center banks and financial institutions, as well as in sundry locations. Of course, it's speculation, but it's something to think about. If we merge your two ideologies together, it really has some fascinating implications.
Well, like I say, I think the implications are it was handled in the book called The Big Reset, where I think this is where things are going eventually, because at some point there's no possibility the debt will ever be repaid, either U.S. debt or global Western debt. So the only thing you can do is reset it. Jim Rickards talks about it, and there's been examples of resets in the past throughout history, so there's nothing new. It'll be, you know, largely reset against gold and silver, and it won't be like we had the early part of this bull market from 2002 to 2011, where it was sort of a stair-step increase. You know, one morning, on a Monday morning, you'll wake up and the gold price will be $2,000 or $3,000 higher. And if you don't have it, it'll be too late to buy it.
And it's so well said, because despite our wonderful transportation system we have today, nothing like the 70s and 80s. All around the world, you know, packages shipped by UPS, FedEx, and DHL, and so many others, just to the most remote locations. You have eBay. We also have lost the mom-and-pop coin shop that we all grew up with, where we traded in our pennies. They were just the best.
Well, it's interesting that the kids, if you've ever given a, you know, gold or silver coin to the kids as a birthday present or, you know, anything like that, they get it right away. You don't have to explain to them that this is real money and this has value. They instantly get it.
Because they haven't been corrupted by the media sources that view it as a barbarous relic.
Exactly.
It's anathema to the system.
In terms of our company, we're launching our third mutual fund, which is a silver fund. The first fund that I launched back in 2002 is a gold, silver, platinum. Then we launched a gold-only fund in 2008, and now we're launching a silver fund to round that out. And the issue is all our funds are open-end mutual fund trusts, which is critical compared to the other methods like closed-end funds, because we purchase and redeem bullion into the bullion market, so our liquidity is the same as the bullion markets themselves. We also don't compromise any aspects of that. We don't market time. We don't hedge. We don't lease. We don't do that. You decide when to buy and when to sell, and we accommodate that. All the gold is held on a fully allocated insured basis. We have the list of the bars being held on our website. This latest fund that we're now going to launch later this month will be the silver-only fund, because we've had a lot of demand from our financial advisors. They like the original fund for strategic allocation, you know, in terms of a 10 to 20% allocation of a portfolio. But given silver is likely to outperform gold dramatically, they would like to add silver to increase the percentage allocation for some clients. That's what we're doing there. We also sell individual bars to high net worth investors, and we have storage of facilities through Brinks all over the world. So the mutual funds are primarily designed for registered retirement accounts and smaller investors. And then the bullion bars are outside of registered accounts and meant for high net worth investors. So that way we try and cover the broad range.
We'll have links to Bullion Management Group available. You can just go to the website or click the emails that we send out to you on our list. We'd really like to invite you to return more regularly, if possible. Keep us updated in this exciting, nascent bull market.
I'd be happy to come back. Thank you, Chris.
The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity, Brazil Resources. Based in the eighth largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves, industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank, and founding director. Their São Jorge project is 100% owned, with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their RIA project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond. Your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice. We'll be right back.